Okay, so we're holding on Memches Amud Aleph by the first Mishnah, so four lines from the top. We said in the first Mishnah of our Perek, we had a summary of how long the different mitzvahs of Sukkot last for. So we said Lulav and Arava are either 6 or 7 days, depending which day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, as we talked about over the last few blocks. Then we said HaHalav HaSimcha Shmoina, that Halal and Simcha take place for 8 days. Simcha, meaning Shalmei Simcha, that you have a mitzvah to eat the meat of a shlomim. So what does that mean? Ketzad, how is that? So Halal, the Gemara is not really going into the detail, fairly obviously. Okay, just say Halal during all 8 days. We talked about yesterday, by the way, the idea that Shmini Atzeres is a Yom Tov of its own, and therefore you say Halal on it. You say Halal Shalom, that is, unlike Pesach. The difference is also Pesach, the last 6 days, we only say Chatzi Halal, whereas Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, we say whole Halal throughout. There's two major reasons for that. One is that on Shvi Shal Pesach, we don't want to say full Halal, because that's when the Mitzrayim drown, and after all, Maisi Yodah Tevim Bayam, so how can we say Shira? So therefore, we only say Chatzi Halal. And then, once we're doing that on Shvi Shal Pesach, we're not going to make Chol HaMoed Pesach more important than Shvi Shal Pesach, therefore, all those days, we say only Chatzi Halal. That's one reason. The other reason is because Pesach, you bring the same exact korban every day for all 7 days. Whereas Sukkot every day, as we talked about briefly yesterday, we're going to learn in more detail in the next parak, that's the Shem, you have a different number of korbanos each day, 13 parim the first day, 12 the second, etc. So in that sense, each day is like a mini Yom Tov in itself, and therefore it deserves full halal. Okay. So we're going to focus on, so we're going to focus mainly on Simcha. So Malamed, Chayav Adam B'Halal, so from this we learn that a person is Chayav to say Halal, full Halal that is, over Simcha, and the Simcha of eating Shlomim, or nowadays that we don't have Shlomim, then you have the various other kinds of Simcha, Basar and Yayin, and then nice clothes for the women, etc. Over Chavod Yom Tov Achon Shochag, and in the cupboard of the last day of Yom Tov of Shmini Atzeres, Kishal Kol Yom Sechag, just like he's Chayav in those things throughout all the 7 days of Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, Menahani Nili, where do we know that from? That you need to have Simcha of on Shmini Atzeres. After all, I mean, the Pasuk doesn't mention Simcha specifically by Shmini Atzeres. It says, Chag HaSukkos Tatzel L'chol Shivas Yomim, and then V'Samachta B'Chagecha V'Arisa Ach Sameach. Doesn't say anything over there about Shmini Atzeres. So how do we know Shmini Atzeres? You have to have Simcha. So D'Tonen Abonon, when the Pasuk says V'Arisa Ach Sameach, when it says you should be only Sameach L'Rabbis Leila Yom Tov Achron, that comes to include also the last night of Yom Tov, the night of Shmini Atzeres. That you need to have, it needs to be a continuation of the other days, namely, Rashi says, you need to bring Shlomim on the seventh day, on Hoshana Rabbah, so that you have meat of Shlomim to eat that night. The point is, since it says, at the beginning of that pasuk, it doesn't need to say, except for this drasha. Now, Rashi over here explains like this. The other days we don't really need a ribui for, because when the Torah says, Shivas Yomim Tochog, then it means it includes the nights also. But like this, since the day of Shmini Atzeres, it doesn't specifically say that you need Simcha, so therefore we need a ribui for the night. Once we have that ribui, Rashi says, then we can learn that the day of Shmini Atzeres is also included by a kavachoyim. The kavachoyim being that the day is the main thing. On the other hand, there's a Tosfos in Pesachim where you also have the sugya that disagrees with that and says maybe not. Maybe the Gemara is implying over here that you only have a chiyuv of Simcha on the night of Shmini Atzeres and not specifically but on the day of Shmini Atzeres. Maybe on the day you're not really required to eat meat of Shlomim anymore. Anyway, so we're learning that from the words Vayisa Ach Sameach. Oy Eina Ela Yom Tov Rishon. How do you know it means Shmini Atzeres? Maybe it means the first night of Yom Tov. No, Kshu Oma Ach Cholach. Since the pasuk says "Vayisa Ach Sameach," the word "Ach" comes to exclude something. The "Ach" is always a meal, so therefore it comes to exclude the first night. Actually, the Meiri says, I mean, on the face of it, the Gemara was saying to begin with that we're learning from "Vayisa Ach Sameach" to include the night of Shmini Atzeres. Since when do we include something from the word "Ach"? "Ach" is always to exclude something. So he says basically what it is you need to exclude any possibility of non-simcha. In other words, if you didn't bring shlomim, you didn't have meat of shlomim that night, unlike all the other nights and days, then there would be a certain lack of simcha, and the Torah is telling you not to do that. There's also a vort that I've seen, I think in the name of the Vilna Gaon, that says the vort is, during the rest of Sukkot, you have other mitzvahs as well. So you can't say you ach sameach in the sense that you have many things to do. You have sukkah, you have lulav. On the eighth day, you have no other mitzvah other than to be sameach. So therefore we can include that. But we're excluding the first night. Now, says the Gemara, Umar Isa Larabis Leila Yamtava Achron Alohoitsu Leila Yamtava edition. What's the logic? How do you know that Varyisa Ach Sameach is including the night of Shmini Atzeres and excluding the first night? Meaning, excluding the first night means that you're not obligated to bring Shlomim on Erev Yamtav in order to have meat of Shlomim to eat that night. So what's the logic? The logic is, Marbani Leila Yamtava Achron Shiesh Simcha Lepanav. It's more logical to include the last night, the night of Shmini Atzeres, because there is Yamtav before it, and therefore, in effect, what you're saying is that the Simcha has to continue. Umoitziani Leila Yamtava Rishon Shein Simcha Lepanav. So that's how it is. So you're not obligated to bring Shlomim on Erev Yamtav in order to be able to eat them the first night, but you are obligated during the following 8 days, 7 days rather, to be bringing shlomim or to join in somebody else's shlomim and to eat the meat of it and thus have simcha. And that includes also the night of Shmini Atzeres. So that's what we mean what the Mishnah means when it says simcha is shmoina. So it includes so it starts from the first day and it goes through including, according to Rashi, also the eighth day, and according to Tosfos there in Pesachim, not necessarily, but in any case it includes parts of 8 days. The Mishnah says, Sukkah Shiva Ketzad. Next, the next thing we had there in that first Mishnah of the Perek was, we said Sukkah and Nisuch HaMayim are for all 7 days. So let's focus first on Sukkah. What do we mean that Sukkah lasts for 7 days? So obviously, okay, it means that you eat in the Sukkah for the whole 7 days. But the point is, in other words, the full 7 days. Gomer Milechel, when a person has finished eating his main meal on the seventh day, on Hoshana Rabba, lo yater as sukkosoy, he should not at that point start taking down his sukkah. Yater literally means to untie. So for pastures, I guess they used to make sukkahs in those days, at least they used to make the walls by tying pieces of wood or bundles or what have you together to make walls. So you shouldn't start untying it and undoing it, because after all, you still have the rest of the day. You have to eat and you have to sleep and learn and whatever in the sukkah. So if you still want to take a nap that day, you're going to have to do it in the sukkah. If you want to eat something more than a kezias, as we talked about in the second parak, you're going to need to do it in the sukkah, and so forth. Therefore, don't be taking it down already on Hoshana Rabba. Ava murdered is a kelim in a mincha olamayla, but he can take out the furniture that he used there, beginning from mincha time and on. He can take those out of the sukkah and put them in his house to get ready for the night, because of the covered of the last night of Yom Tov, that this way he's showing in advance that he's preparing his house in advance to eat a nice Yom Tov meal. We're talking about in Eretz Yisrael. They don't sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. So you're showing before Yom Tov that you're already preparing for the covered of Yom Tov. So that you can do. So the Gemara asks, Ein lo kelim lahorid mahu, what if a person doesn't have any furniture to take out of the sukkah? Then what should he do in order to demonstrate that when he's sitting in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres, he's not being over on Baal Tosif? After all, the Torah tells us, lo yisayisifu, you're not allowed to add to the mitzvahs. So if he were to sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres, in Eretz Yisrael, or by us, it would be Simchas Torah, having in mind that he's doing it for the sake of the mitzvah, then he would be over on Baal Tosif. So if he doesn't have any furniture in there to take out, then how does he demonstrate that's not the case? The Gemara says, what kind of a question is that? Ein lo kelim, elo ki yishtamash, ma yishtamash. So what do you use the whole 7 days in the sukkah? Ela, ein lo mokim lahorid kelim mahu. Right, what we mean is, what if he doesn't have any place to put his furniture? What if he doesn't have, for Shmini Atzeres, some place like this, we're saying he takes out the furniture and starts arranging it in his house. What if he doesn't have a place in his house to rearrange it over there? So then what should he do in order to, it's necessarily, he's going to be sitting in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres as well. What should he do to show that he's not being over on Baal Tosif? So Rav Chiya bar Rav Omer, or Rav Chiya bar Abba, it says on the side, Rav Chiya bar Ashi actually, Poiches bar Abba. What he does is he takes out four tfachim of the schach. And with that, he makes the sukkah possible. Tosfos wonders why four tefachim? You learned back in the first parak that three tefachim of empty space without tzchach is enough to pass the sukkah. Why over here would you need four? So there's a couple of different explanations that Mephoshim give. One is that four, after all, is a mokum choshuv. And the Ritva says that you're right. If it was a small sukkah, three tefachim would be enough. But because we're talking about a larger sukkah, then you need four tefachim. It's true that three is enough to passel it no matter the size of the sukkah. But when it's a large sukkah of space, it's three tefachim. It's not going to be as noticeable, so you need four. The Ravya gives a different explanation. He says, listen, if you're going to take away schach from the sukkah, you're not going to leave it open to the sky. What happens if it rains? You're not going to want your stuff to get wet. Necessarily, what you're going to do is you're going to cover that area with possible schach. Well, we learned in the first parak that tzach posel is posel ba'ba, is posel four tefachim, therefore you need four tefachim over here. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, I'm a madlik bar saner. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi gives a different answer. What you do is you light a lamp inside the sukkah. Now, we said at the end of the second parak that when you have a small sukkah, then the lamp belongs outside of it. We talk about a couple of reasons why. Is it because since it's a small sukkah, only barely 7 by 7 tefachim, so if you put a lamp in there, and necessarily you can't sit right next to the lamp, your clothes will catch on fire, therefore that reduces the area you have in the sukkah, and therefore you don't have enough space for Rosh HaVerubah V'Shulchanai? Or is it just because it's such a small sukkah, you're afraid that the whole sukkah is going to catch on fire? Whatever the case, we said that in a small sukkah, the lamp belongs outside. So here, we're talking about a small sukkah, then you bring in the lamp, and that way you show that you're not using it as a sukkah anymore. And the Gemara says, v'loy pligi, so actually they're not really arguing, holon v'holohu. It depends for us in Babel versus for them in Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi explains the difference is like this. In Eretz Yisrael, as we said a few days ago, they know when Yom Tov is supposed to be. They don't have to have a second day. They don't have to have the second day Mitzad Safet. So therefore, they can go ahead and remove some of the sach and make it actually possible because they're not going to be, they don't have to sit in the Shmini Atzeres. The only reason this guy is sitting in the Shmini Atzeres is because he has no place else to eat. So therefore, no problem for him to pass all the actual sukkah. Whereas when it comes to Bnei Babel and other places in Chutz La'aretz, where we have to have Yom Tov Sheni because of Safek, then therefore, so you can't actually pass all the schach. The fact is, we said yesterday that you do have to sit in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres. You just don't make the bracha later for sukkah. So therefore, the only alternative is to bring in a lamp or something like that. So there's a different explanation. The Rif and the Rosh have a number of other Rishonim have a different explanation that we're talking about what you do like this in Chutzlar. So we're saying you still sit in the Sukkah Shmini Atzeres, but of course you don't Simchas Torah. Same idea. So the difference is in Eretz Yisrael they're doing whatever it is that they're doing that the Gemara is describing over here. They're doing on the seventh day of Sukkot. So that day is still Chol HaMoed. You're still allowed to tear down part of your Sukkah. You're allowed to tear down part of your Schach. Whereas for us, Bnei Chutz La'aretz, you can't tear down the schach on Shmini Atzeres. It's Yom Tov. You're not allowed to do that. Therefore, necessarily, the only thing you can do is bring a lamp in there if it happens that you're still going to be sitting in your sukkah Simchas Torah because you have no place inside to eat. So the Gemara says, Hartenach sukkah ktana. Okay, so that explains how it'll work for a small sukkah. It'll be good enough to light a lamp in there because you said a small sukkah, the lamp belongs outside. The sukkah gdola mayi for the name of. What if your sukkah is much larger than that, and therefore a lamp is not reducing the usable space by too much? You're not afraid the sukkah is going to catch on fire, etc. So then, what do you do? Again, in Chutz La'aretz, where you can't take off schach, either according to Rashi, because the fact is you still need to sit in there Shmini Atzeres, or according to the Rif, because we're talking this was all taking place on Shmini Atzeres itself, and you can't take down schach. The answer is okay. So the Iowa money mechla, fine. So what he does is instead he brings in there kalim that are used for eating. The Amar Rava, because we said in that same sugya at the end of the second parak, money mechla ban mitalalta, dishes that you eat out of. Well, actually, money mechla, we said there's two different explanations. One is it means dirty dishes that you ate from, for example, bowls or plates or whatever. The other explanation is that money mechla meant things that you cook food in, like pots and pans. Anyway, he said those belong barmin mitalalta outside the sukkah because those are mere stick. They're dirty and disgusting, and you don't want them in the place where you're sitting and spending most of your time. And in the case of pots and pans, you b'chlal don't usually bring those to the table. You leave those in the kitchen. Maninishi of the Matalauta, whereas drinking things, cups and whatever, belong in the sukkah when you're using them, and even afterwards, because dirty cups are not as repulsive. So therefore, again, on Hashanah Rabbah in Chutz La'aretz, according to Rashi, or on Shmini Atzeres in Chutz La'aretz, according to the Rif, you bring in these pots and pans and other things like that into the sukkah if you're going to be eating there the next day, and that way you demonstrate you're not using it as a sukkah. An interesting point actually is that Rashi uses the expression when it comes to taking out the four tefachim that you're passeling it. A number of Rishonim also seem to understand that in effect what the Gemara is saying is you have to be doing something that's going to passel the sukkah. So the question is, what do we mean by passeling it? On the face of it, bringing in dishes or a lamp or whatever is not going to passel the sukkah per se. So there are on the Rif, there are a number of Mephoshim take up that possibility. The Ravid says, in fact, what you're doing is, in effect, you could say you are passeling it. You're making it that now it's an unwelcoming place to be by having dirty dishes in it. Therefore, in that sense, it's passel. It's not going to be a place where you're going to want to sit. It would be similar to, I don't know if he makes the comparison, but it would be similar to maybe what we learned in the first Perek about you have a certain kinds of schach that smell bad or whatever, where you're not going to want to sit in such a sukkah. The Ramban says also, a little bit similarly, he argues private on that, but he says still, you know, okay, what it means is there's a certain tasteful kind of judo lacking over there. On the other hand, a number of the Mephoshim say it doesn't really mean you're passeling it per se. It's just a figure of speech as to say that you're demonstrating that you're not using it as a sukkah anymore. You're just using it as a convenient place to eat because you don't have another place available. Anyway, that's the halacha. So for Bnei Eretz Yisrael, if they have to eat in the sukkah Shmini Atzeres, and then in order not to be over on Baal Tos, if they remove some of the schach, and in Chutz La'aretz, if we need to eat, we still eat in a full sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, we don't take anything out, but if we need to eat for whatever reason in the sukkah on Simchas Torah, then let's say your air conditioning in your house broke down and you can't eat indoors, then you need to do one of these things, bring something into the sukkah to demonstrate that you're not using it as a sukkah anymore. Okay. Next, we said that there's sukkah and there's nisuch hamayim that take place for 7 days. So let's talk about the details of nisuch hamayim. Nisuch hamayim takes that. How was that done? Shloiches shel zahav machzekes shloisha lugim. They would take a golden pitcher that held three lugim. Hoyim amalim in a shiloyach, they would fill it up from the shiloyach, which is a spring right near Yerushalayim. Why three lugim? Rashi says, because you have among the nesachim, you have among the wine that's brought from nesachim for the various korbanos, the minimum amount we ever find for nesachim is three lugim for a sheep. So now by nisach hamayim, as we said earlier in the perek, is halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, but nevertheless, the Tanakhama is saying over here, it still follows the same precedent, and therefore three lugim. We're going to see in the Mishnah later on that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. So he filled it up from the Shiloyach spring. Then they'd bring it to the Bismikdash. He gives the Shar HaMayim. Once they reach the Shar HaMayim, which is one of the southern gates of the Azara, and in fact they called it Shar HaMayim, the Mishnah says, because of that, because they brought in one reason, is because they brought the water for Nisuch HaMayim through that gate. So when they came there, Toku Ve'iriu V'Toku, they would blow, the Kohen would blow a Tkiyah through a Tkiyah as an expression of Simcha, as we'll talk about on Amud Beis. Next, Ola B'Kedesh, the Kohen goes up the ramp of the Mizbeach, Ufana L'Smoiloi, and he turns to his left. Now, usually the rule is, when you go anywhere you're turning in the Beis Mikdash, you're supposed to turn to your right. Usually when the Kohen would go up the Kedesh, also he would turn to his right. You would have the Kevesh is on the south side of the Mizbeach. Usually he would turn to the right. So he'd first reach the southeast corner, and then, like we say every morning in davening, Mizrachis Dremis Tzvonis Ma'arobis, Kevesh Ravonal Sever, Volatone Dremis Mizrachis, Mizrachis Tzvonis, Tzvonis Ma'arobis, Ma'arobis Dremis. So he'd go around the Mizbeach counterclockwise, but really what it is, when you think about it, he's walking on the Sovev, which is a ledge, one armor wide that surrounds the Mizbeach. So really what he's doing when he's walking around like that, he's not walking straight ahead, he's walking sideways with his face towards the Mizbeach all the time. So therefore it comes out that as he moves along, he's constantly moving to his right. And that winds up, therefore, that he's going counterclockwise around the Mizbeach. However, as the Gemara is going to point out on Amud Beis, there are a few exceptions to that, one of them being when he's going up from Nisach HaMayim, where instead he turns to his left, as we'll see in the Gemara why. There were two silver bowls there. There were two silver bowls there attached to the Mizbeach. Rabbi Yehuda says they weren't made out of silver. Shall sid hoyu. They were actually made out of plaster. Ela shoyu mushchorim pnei mepnei ayayim. But they were darkened because of the wine that was poured into them, and therefore they looked like silver. Tosfos, by the way, wonders, according to either one, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, they're made out of silver or plaster, respectively. How is it we're pouring from a golden pitcher into a silver or a plaster one? What happened to Malin Bakodesh Olam Yeridin? We have, for example, the Lachem Aponim, that when they took the Lachem Aponim off the Shulchan every Shabbos, when they took the old Lachem Aponim off the Shulchan, they would put it on a gold table near the entrance of the Heichel, rather than some other material, because Malin Bakodesh Olam Yeridin. Tosfos says because here the bowls are attached to the mizbeach, so therefore that's different. It's no different than the way you take from a. It's no different than, for example, you take the lavoina with the lechem upon him from gold spoons and you offer it on the mizbeach, which is built out of stone. But that's what the Torah says to do. So the same way over here, it doesn't matter that the bowls are made out of some lesser material because they're attached to the mizbeach and they're considered part of it. Anyway, these bowls, umenukovin kemin shnei choytmin dakin. These bowls have holes in them like two little noses. Now, so Rashi understands that it was like this. Each bowl had at the bottom of it a hole, and then from that hole there stuck out like a tube or something like that, which resembled a nose, and then from there it would spill onto the top of the mizbeach, and from there it would go down into the shistin, into the underground cavity under the mizbeach, where the blood and the nesachim and everything collected, which we'll talk about the shistin in more detail tomorrow, Bez Hashem. So according to Rashi, that was how it was. It went from the bowls through these things that stuck out onto the top of the mizbeach, and from there into the shisin. Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says there's no particular reason to say that it should be that way. Why shouldn't we assume that it goes from the bowls directly into the shisin? So rather, Tosfos says, listen, Rashi is explaining that choytmin means like noses, so therefore they have to stick out like a nose. Who says the word choytim can mean a nostril instead? So it means that there was a hole in there, like two nostrils, and therefore the wine and the water flowed directly from the bowl through the hole at the bottom right down into the shisim. Okay, the echad meuba the echad dak. Of these two holes, one of them was thicker and one of them was thinner. Or according to Rashi, the two tubes were one thinner and one thicker. So that the wine and the water both drain out at the same time, because that's more of the hiddur mitzvah to do it that way. In other words, as the Gemara is going to say, wine is thicker than water. Now, not necessarily do you have one koyan doing them at the same time, because that would require he's going to have to be doing one of them with his left hand, and usually avodah is possible with the left hand. But rather, it could mean that he did one after the other, but still, it takes time. He did the wine first, because tadr v'sheni tadr, and it takes time for it to drain. Or the other possibility is maybe there were two koyanim. Maybe one koyan would be carrying the wine and the other one the water, and they could taka do it at the same time. Anyway, the point is, wine being thicker, it takes more time to drain, so therefore they made it that way. Next, Ma'arova Shomayim Mizrochei Shoyayim. The bowl that was closer to the west was the one they were supposed to pour the water into. The one closer to the east was the one that they poured the wine into. Why is that? Because, the Me'iri explained, since the Kohen is coming from the south, which is where the ramp are, then he turns to the left, meaning he's walking from east to west. So they're on the side of the mizbeach. Now that means, in other words, the first one. He comes first to the one for wine, and then for the one for the water, and that's how it should be. Because again, tadr v'sheni tadr, he needs to pour the wine first. Therefore, the bowl for that was closer to him. On the other hand, ira shomayim l'seich shoyayin. If he poured the water into the bowl that was supposed to be for the wine, v'shoyayin l'seich shomayim, or the wine into the one that was supposed to be for the water, yotze. Then he's yotze. The Rambam actually has a different explanation of that last phrase. He understands it means not just if you poured it into the wrong bowl, then there's no chiddush. Of course you get it. He says it means even if you mix the wine and the water together and then poured them together into one of the bowls, you're also still yotze. Because ultimately they all go down into the same shit and into the same underground tunnel and cavity under the mizbeach. And therefore, even though the hatchila, they're supposed to be kept separate, but the eved, you mix them together, no problem. The Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'loy goyim menasach kol shmoina. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Tanna Kamma on 2 points. Number one, he says it wasn't 3 lugim; it was only 1 lug. And number two, he says it wasn't only the 7 days of Sukkot, but also on Shmini Atzeret. Continues the Mishnah. V'la menasach Omer loy, the one who was pouring the water, they would tell him hadbeya yodcha, lift up your hand so that everybody can clearly see that you're pouring the water into the bowl. And the reason why they needed to tell him that, Shapamachas Nisich Echad Agabe Raglov, one time one Koyan, who the Gemara was going to point out, was a Tzduki, and the Tzdukim don't believe in Nisich HaMayim because they say in the Torah, and of course we know their philosophy was we only believe in Torah Shabbat. So one time, one Koyan poured, Agabe Raglov poured the water on his feet. Urugamuhu Kola Ambe Esregehen, and all the people pelted him with their Esregim. So therefore, to prevent that from happening again, the Chachamim from then on made the rule that we have to tell the guy to lift his hand up high. There's a sicha in Chelek Beis where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning behind what happened over here. This that with Bechlal, the in Chassidus it talks about what's the whole idea behind pouring wine on a mizbeach throughout the year, and then during Sukkot pouring water as well. The idea is wine has a taste and a smell and a bouquet, and therefore it represents the aspect of Torah that we understand and we appreciate. So that we have the rest of the year. Sukkot, we have to also add water. We also have to pour water, which represents Kabbalah's oil. Water has no taste, no smell, no nothing, and yet still necessary for life, and so is Kabbalah's oil. The Tzedukim didn't hold of the concept of Kabbalah's oil. They held, in general, that only those parts of Torah that we understand logically are good, and the ones that not, we don't bother with. So therefore, he didn't want to do Nisach HaMayim, and when he did, he poured it on his feet, as if to say the feet represent the lower level of the people. Like you have Rosh Bnei Yisrael versus you have the feet among the Jewish people, the Hamon Am. So in effect, he's saying by that, you know what? You want water, you want Kabbalah soil. Fine, that's good for the foot people. That's not good for the intelligentsia like me and other people like me. So what happened? They answered by pelting him, by stoning him with their esrogim. Where the esrog is of the dalet minim, it's the one that has all the advantages. It has the smell and it has the taste. It has Torah and it has mitzvahs, representing to him that no, they tell him even the Talmud Chachamim among us, even the esrogim among us, disagree with that mentality of yours. Even we know, even the Talmud Chachamim among us know that Kabbalah's oil is essential for a yidz avoda. That's in Chelek Beis. This is a different sicha many years later, where the Rebbe also added to that. First of all, we say urgamuhu. The word rogam usually implies pelting with stones. And in fact, the Gemara is going to tell us that apparently there were stones there because the Gemara is going to end up saying that the Mizbeach ended up getting damaged by all this. So why they throw stones at him, as well as the Esrogim, is to represent that they're telling him, you have a problem. You have a lev ha'evin. You have a heart of stone. You don't have a heart that's receptive to elikus like it should be. Eventually, though, there came out of it a mila that had be'a yodcha. They tell him in future time, lift up your hand, like we're showing the avoda is going to be on a higher level than it was before, because instead of that, the Zukim were trying to challenge it. It's interesting, by the way, the Mishnah doesn't identify who this Kohen Gadol was. And unfortunately, there were different times during the second Mishnah when there were Kohenim who were Tzedukim. Josephus actually tells a very similar story in his histories, and he identifies that Kohen Gadol as none other than Yanai HaMelech. So he describes what happened is that that Yanai, the Pashtus, maybe the Gemara didn't want to identify him out of covered for him, whatever it is, anyway. So he spills the beans that it was Yanai Melech, and he goes on to say afterwards that after everybody pelted him with his esrogim, unfortunately, he goes on to say that there was a sad end to it. Yanai called out his soldiers, mostly Goyish mercenaries, and they killed several thousand Jews over there. The truth is, it might not be the same story. It might be that this happened more than once, because the Yerushalmi, on the other hand, has the story that in the end, with all the stones and astragalus that they pelted him with, they killed him. So the Yerushalmi has that they killed him. Josephus is saying that he killed them, so it might be two different stories. Or it might be that, or it might just be that Josephus just altered the story, you know, as he often does in his history. All right. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. The same way as Nisuch HaMayim was done on weekdays, so it was done on Shabbos, which is why we said in the Mishnah that Nisuch HaMayim is Shiva. Unlike Lulav and Arava, which we said depending what day Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, you don't do Lulav or you don't do Arava. Nisuch HaMayim you do on Shabbos just as you do on weekday. El, show you Mimalam, Erev Shabbos. The difference is you have to fill up the water Erev Shabbos because you can't carry it from the Shiloyach to the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. So on Erev Shabbos, they would fill up with the water and put it in Chavis. So instead, they would take Chavis Shal Zahav, a golden barrel, She'enim HaKudeshes, which is not one of the clay shoris. And the reason is because if the Gemara is going to explain, eventually that the problem was that if it was a kli sharis, the problem was if you leave anything over in a kli sharis overnight, it becomes possible. And here they need to leave it overnight from Friday to Shabbos. Therefore, they davka had to use a barrel that was not designated as a kli sharis. So they would fill that up min hashiloyach. They would fill that up from the shiloyach like the other days. Umanicha balishka, and they would place it in a chamber of the Beis Mikdash, and then the next day they'd use it for Nisuch HaMayim. Nishpacha, what if over Friday night that water spilled and now they can't use it? Or nisgalsa, or what if it got uncovered and then you have in various places in Shas the concern that a snake might have drunk from it and injected venom into it? Now, what would be the problem with that? Rashi says, because you need an exact amount of water that you pour on the Mizbeach. If the snake drinks some of it and expels some venom into it, now you don't have full 3 lugim of water. You have almost 3 lugim of water and a little bit of snake venom, and that doesn't work. Tosfos says you don't really need that reason. Later on, the Gemara is going to actually give a different reason. It's called Hakrivehu Nolofech HaSecha. Anything which you wouldn't think is proper to offer to a human governor or a human king or whatever, then lahavdo, you don't offer it to Hashem either. And since you wouldn't offer such water, because it may have venom in it, therefore you can't offer it on the Mizbeach either. There is a good deal of discussion actually among Achronim. Bechlal, you have a rule that anything you're not allowed to eat or drink, you're not allowed to offer on the Mizbeach. You have a based on a pasuk in Yechezkel, it says, Mimashke Yisrael. So we learn from that, only things that can be drunk by Jews are allowed to be offered on the Mizbeach. So wouldn't that be a reason to passel it anyway, the fact that we're not allowed to drink such water because of the danger? And they talk about various possibilities, including one interesting one. Since the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, like Hizik Nochash Ba'akar V'Yishlayim, that one of the nisim that happened in the Beis Mikdash was that snakes and scorpions never harmed anybody in Yishlayim. And Mephoshim say there, it doesn't just mean they didn't bite. It means even if they bit, their bite was not fatal. So therefore, maybe if a snake does expel venom into it, so in Yishlayim, it might not be dangerous to drink. But you have the problems that Rashi and Tosfos are saying, that you don't have the full 3 lugim, or that it's still not something that would be proper to offer to a human being. Okay, so anyway, so suppose that happens. Now what do you do on Shabbos morning, since you can't go to the Shiloyach and fill up new water? Then you go and fill the pitcher with water from the Kiyar. Now, the Kiyar, of course, is a Kli Sharis. The water of it is posel with Lina. But Rashi explains that in Yuma, it talks about that the Kiyar, they had a special arrangement called the Muchni to prevent the water of the Kiyar from becoming posel with Lina. Rashi and most Mephoshim over there explain that the Muchni is a pulley, that they would lower the Kiyar every day down underground, and then the water in it mixes with the water, with the underground water, and therefore it's not water that's in a Kli Sharis and it doesn't become possible. The Rambam has a different understanding of it, that the Muchni is basically a tank that surrounded the Kiyar, where they would refill the Kiyar from it as necessary. And since that tank is not a Kli Sharis, then the water of it doesn't become possible with Lina. Anyway, so now they have, the Kiyar is full of water, and therefore they could fill up the pitcher from that. And the reason why they have to do that, why if the water becomes uncovered, why they have to do that, is because wine or water that were left uncovered long enough where a snake could have drunk for them are possible to bring on the Mizbeach, as we said, the reasons why. And the Gemara, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that on Daf Nun, that's the Shem, at the very end of the parak. Okay. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili. How do we know this? Now, what is it that we need? What is it that we need to know a source for? Rashi says, how do we know? We said that the Kohenim blow tkiya tzura tkiya when they're bringing in the water, or when they're drawing the water and bringing it into the smikdash. So how do we know that? Tosfos says the question is, how do we know that we need water from a spring, Dafka? And the answer is, the pasuk says you should draw water with happiness, mimaine hayeshua, from the wellsprings of saving, and therefore, so we learn both. We learn that it has to be the sosin, so therefore there has to be tkiya through a tkiya to express simcha, and also that it has to be from a spring, which is because it says mimaine hayeshua. Okay. Since we're talking about sosin, so the Gemara tells a bit of an odd story, really. We'll learn the story inside, then we'll talk about various things, what it represents. Hanu tre mini, there were two minim, chad shmei sosin v'chad shmei simcha, where their names were sosin and simcha, respectively. Omalei sosin l'simcha, so sosin says to simcha, ano adifne minach. I am greater than you. You have a pasuk that describes how the Jewish people are going to have sosin and simcha, and sosin is placed first, so obviously I'm greater. Amalei simcha v'sosin. On the other hand, simcha replies back, I'm better than you. Simcha v'sosin la'yehudim. So you have simcha is sometimes placed first. Amalei sosin l'simcha. So sosin says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to you. Yoy mechad shavkuch. One day, they're going to, literally, shavkuch means they're going to abandon you. Rashi says, yafki'ucha min hashamayim. They're like, Hashem is going to force you to abandon whatever you were doing until now. V'shavyucha pravanka. They're going to make you a runner to go and run in front of people and announce that they're coming, like kings and noblemen and whatever have in those days. Because the pasuk says, you'll go out with simcha. So therefore, in other words, any time you go out, you're going to have simcha announcing your presence. Amalei simcha l'sasen. So simcha fires back. He says, as far as you, chad yom shav kucha umola v'chamaya. As far as you, one day they're gonna abandon you again, like they're gonna make you abandon whatever you were doing until now and do something new. Umola v'chamaya. They're gonna force you to fill up water for them to be a water drawer. Dichtiv shav t'mayim v'sasen. And continues the Gemara. The min named Sosa, and it might have been the same one or it might have been a different one, says Rav Abahu, in that vein, in the future, in Olam Haba, you are going to be filling up water for me. It says you're going to be drawing water with Sosa, implying you're going to be drawing water on behalf of Sosa, which is me. Amalei, so Rav Abahu says, no, you're misunderstanding the passage. Sure, if it said lis sasen, then we could accept what you're saying. But it says with sasen. That means we're going to use you. We're going to take the skin of that person, meaning you, we're going to make it into a water skin, or melinin, and we're going to use it to fill up water. Now, what's going on over here? And it almost sounds like a joke, and the Gemara, of course, is not just telling us jokes. So actually, Marsha says that this is meant to illustrate the way that the minim, the kind of silly arguments that the minim come up with. Like they can't even keep their arguments straight. Any argument that they make from psukim, you can right away shoot down and show that they don't even understand the psukim, let alone anything else. On the other hand, there are deeper meanings in it as well. The Olal Sefraim, which is a sefer of Jerushim from the Kli Yoker, as an explanation of it, he says that Sosin and Simcha, he says, represent, respectively, Sosin represents Mila, like Sosin Erchi Ala Masecha, Simcha represents the Simcha of getting married, and therefore the argument between these two minim actually reflects a deeper question, which one is greater, the Simcha of a Mila or the Simcha of a wedding? So one of them is saying to the other, Sosin is saying to Simcha, so for example, so he goes on at some length over there. Sosin says to Simcha, you know what? The fact is, you're not always needed, like in the sense, like you're only a runner to herald everybody else coming, because after all, you have certain rare people who don't get married. You have Ben Azai, for example, who was B'choshka Nafshi Batorda, and therefore he didn't want to get married. You have other people like that. And then Simcha says to Sasan, yeah, but on the other hand, it's true, everybody needs Mila, but it's really only a prerequisite for something greater that a person's mind and mouth and ears and whatever should be opened up to other courses. And they go back and forth like that about which one has a Mila over the other one. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about it. Again, you know, it sounds like a joke, but given that it's in the Gemara, then it means it is part of Torah. That in a different way we can say simcha represents a simcha visible on the outside. Sasan is more a joy that you feel inside, and therefore the argument between them is which one is greater. There's an advantage to a simcha that's shown outwardly. There's a different advantage to a simcha that's more inner, that's kept inside and not publicly demonstrated, and therefore the argument between them reflects that which one of those is a greater mila. As far as the part with Rav Bohu, Marashah says the vote is that this min is saying, what are you looking forward to Olam Abba, or what are you looking forward to Yemos Mashiach, and Rav Bohu explains to him that you're not going to be making it over there. You being a min, you have no chelik l'olam haba. All that's going to be left of you is your skin, your chitzonius, and that will serve us. Well, in other words, the idea is that his pnimius is going to be, the Rav Bohu telling him, your pnimius, your essence is going to be gone because you're not going to be getting up l'asad lava, but your chitzonius, represented by your skin, that'll still be there, and that will be serving us. So in that way, he put him in his place where he's thinking that we have nothing to look forward to in Olam Haba, and Rav Bohu tells him just the opposite. We have a lot to look forward to, you not so much. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Olav Kevesh upon the smoyle v'chola. We said he went up the ramp of the Mizbeach, and he turned to his left. And he found the two bowls up there. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Kol Olam l'mizbeach, Olam derech yamin. Whenever anybody went up to the Mizbeach, they would go towards the right side, meaning that they not just that they would turn to the right, but when they went up the Kevesh to begin with, they'd be going up the right side of the Kevesh. The Kevesh was 16 amos wide, so the Mizbeach is 32 amos wide, so you'd be walking up the right side of the Kevesh, closer to the right edge. So they would go like that. They'd turn to the right, umakifin, and they'd go around the Mizbeach, v'yodin derech smol, and they'd come down the left side. So they'd make a complete circuit around the Mizbeach, and then come down, walking down the left side of the Kevesh. Chutz mina oila l'shloshet varam alalu, with the exception of somebody who goes up for the following three things, sh'oilin derech smol, v'chozun ala akiv. The following three go up, turning to the left, and then they return right back the way they came. Rashi says that the less walking we can do toward the left, the better. Therefore, we don't have them after they do whatever it is by the southwest corner, which is the corner that they reach when they turn left. We don't want them to go clockwise around the Mizbeach and then come down the other side, because that would be going unnecessarily too much to their left. Therefore, instead, they just turn around and come right back down the way they came. Tosva says that actually you don't even need that. When they turn around and come back down, that is turning. Derech Yamin. Now they're turning to their right. Anyway, so what are the three things? The Elohei, Nisuch HaMayim, the Nisuch HaYayin. Number one, Nisuch HaMayim. Number two, the poor Nisuch HaYayin. Number three, the Ola Sa'if, Shadov Sabamizrach. Number three, the Ola Sa'if, when there's too much of it in the east. The usual place to do the Malika and the squirting of the blood on the Mizbeach of an Ola Sa'if. Now, an Ola Sa'if has to be done on the top half of the Mizbeach. When it comes to animal korbanos, you have an Ola, you have a Chatas, and you have other korbanos. The rule is the blood of a Chatas behemoth goes on the top half of the Mizbeach. The blood of all other korbanos goes on the bottom half. With birds, it's exactly the opposite. An Ola Sa'if goes on the top half, a Chatas Sa'if goes on the bottom half. So usually, now the usual place to do an Ola Sa'if would be the Kohen would stand on the Soviv by the southeast corner of the Mizbeach. But if there were too many Ola Sa'if being brought at that time and there's no room, then instead he would go to the southwest corner. So that was the third one, that they'd go to the southwest corner. Now, Rashi brings from the Gemara in Zvachim, why in that case would these people not also go all around the Mizbeach? The reason is because going around the Mizbeach takes a while. The perimeter of the Mizbeach is well over 100 amos, because you have 32 amos on a side. So with the wine and the water, what would happen is, as they're walking around, it's going to get full of smoke from the Mizbeach, and it'll become puzzle. And as far as the brewer, it might die from the smoke. So therefore, we have them instead turn to the left and go directly to the corner where they need to do the avodah. So that's why he's going to the left rather than the usual thing, going up the Mizbeach, you go to the right. So we said in the Mishnah, Ela Shahoyu Mashchirin, so Rabbi Yehuda had argued with the Tanakhama, who said that the two bowls were made out of silver. Rabbi Yehuda said they were made out of plaster, but they looked dark because wine was poured into them. The Gemara says, Bishlema de Yayin Mashchir, the one that they poured the wine into, I understand why it turned dark. De Maya, my Mashchir, but why the one that they poured water into turned dark? The answer is, Kivin de Omamah, Irishamayim, the Sefcha Yayin, Rishayayin, the Sefcha Mayin Yatza, because we said in the Mishnah that if you mix them up, or according to the Rambam, you mix them together and you pour them. Then your yotze, sarum shamayim, also lashkuri. So the one that's designated for water, over time it also becomes dark because over time, each year, you sometimes have a kohen who mixes things up and pours the wine into the wrong one. Doesn't even have to be every year, come to think of it. I mean, wine they pour on the mizbeach every day. At least twice a day, more if there are other karbanas. So if it happens that a kohen mixes up and pours it into the wine, into the water one, then soon enough the water one will look dark as well. We said in the Mishnah, we said they had two holes in them, like two small noses, Rashi says, or like two small nostrils, Tosfos says, and we went on to say in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda says, before we get to Rabbi Yehuda, that we said that the two holes were different sizes, so that both liquids drain out about the same time. So the Gemara says, Lema Masnissin, Rabbi Yehuda, he v'loy Rabbanon. Would we have to say that that part of the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Yehuda and not according to the Chachamim? It's not. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a b'loy v'hoi manasseh kol shmeina. We said later in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda says there wasn't three lugum of water, only one lug. So on the face of it, if we're saying that one hole was smaller and one hole was larger, at this point, the Gemara is not taking into consideration the thicknesses of the liquids, just the amounts. So why would it take the water, why would it take the wine any longer time to drain than the water? Must be the pastures because there's more wine than water. Well, according to the Yehuda, then we explain that. There's three lugim of wine. There's only one lug of water. So Rabbi Yehuda says that you use only one lug. So yeah, three lugum of wine compared to one of water, then the water is going to drain out faster unless you make the hole for the water three times as big. According to the Chachamim, why would they be two different sizes? It's the same amount of liquid. It's three lugum. The answer is no, you could say that it's according to the Rabbanon as well, because Chamra Samech, Maya Kolish, because wine is thicker and water is thinner, so even if they're both three lugim, it's still going to take the wine longer to drain out than the water. In fact, it's logical to say that the Mishnah is not only like Rabbi Yehuda, but rather like the Chachamim. The Rabbi Yehuda, if the Mishnah were to be according to Rabbi Yehuda, Roch of the Kotzer, then the Mishnah shouldn't have used the words Me'uba and Dak, but rather would have used the words Rochav and Kotzer, which is, Rashi explains, Rochav compared to Kotzer implies a greater difference than Me'uba compared to Dak. And Rabbi Yehuda uses the words Rochav and Kotzer, implying that according to him there was a huge difference. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Shnei Kasvois Hoyusham, Rabbi Yehuda says that there were two Kasvois, meaning Kalim, over there. Echad Shomayim, the Echad Shoyayin, one for water, one for wine. Shoyayin Pia Rochav, the one for wine had a very wide mouth. Shomayim Pia Kotzer, the one for water had a narrow mouth. Kadesh Yushnim, call them Vasacha, so that they both drain out at the same time. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, what you have is three lugim of thick wine compared to one lug of thin wine, so therefore of thin water. Therefore, according to him, you need a huge difference between them in order for them both to drain at the same time. The fact that instead our Mishnah uses the words Me'uba and Dak implies that Fakir, we're talking according to the Chachamim, there's not a difference in the amount, just a difference in the consistency. Shmamina, so that proves it, that part of the Mishnah is indeed according to the Chachamim. Tosfos, by the way, earlier says that the word mu'uba and dak could also mean actually not the size of the holes so much, but rather the thickness of the bottom of the two bowls. That the one for water had a thicker bottom, so that the water would take longer to drain out than it would out of the one with a thinner bottom, which was for wine. Okay. We said Ma'arove Shomayim, the one on the west, was for water, and we said that one time you had a tzduki who poured the water on his feet, and everybody pelted him with the restoration. The Gemara tells, it happened once that a tzduki poured the water on his feet, and everybody pelted him with the restoration, like we said before. By the way, the Gemara in Yuma also points out, why does the Mishnah have to tell us what they pelted him with? So, okay, we have the Sicha before with a deeper reason for it, but in Pshat, why does the Mishnah have to tell us they pelted him with their Esrogim? The Gemara in Yuma explains, the Tana wants us to know, by the way, that Nisuch HaMayim takes place only in the morning. You shouldn't think it takes place twice a day with the Tomat Shel Shachar and the Tomat Shel Menavayim. No, by mentioning Esrogim, we're meant to understand that it happens only in the morning when people have their Lulav and Esrog with them. Okay, continues the Braisa. But Oisayim Nifgama Keren HaMizbeach. On that day, one of the corners of the Mizbeach was damaged because it actually says, because they threw stones at him as well, and some of those hit the Mizbeach square on and broke part of it. They view Bul Shom Melach v'sasmu. So they took a fistful of salt and closed up the damage. Now that's not because the mizbeach is going to be kosher for the avoda when it's closed up with that. It has to be closed up with the actual material that the mizbeach is built from. They're just out of cover for the mizbeach. They didn't want it to be damaged over there. It shouldn't look damaged. And after yom tov they fixed it with stones and plaster and whatever else the mizbeach is made out of. In that sicha, the Rebbe explains also the deeper reason why we're saying that the mizbeach was damaged and that they fixed it with salt. The mizbeach damage represents that they're telling him the same way as they're telling him, we asroigim disagree with your mentality that you don't need kabbalah soil. You should know your avoda is really incomplete like that. Your personal mizbeach is damaged as a result of such a mentality. And we're going to fix it with salt, where salt represents pnimiyas haTorah. Like you have the Rebbe refers to, you have the Gemara in Shabbos that says that you have to learn Torah, but you have to also cultivate Yiras Shemayim, which is like when you store away grain, you have to store away some salty soil with it to preserve it, otherwise it's going to rot. So therefore, so learning Pnimiyas HaTorah and developing Yiras Shemayim is represented by salt. So they fix the Mizbeach with salt to represent. That's how we need to fix up the situation, by having greater Yiras Shemayim and learning Pnimiyas HaTorah rather than just like you tzduki who think that Torah Shebichtav is enough for you. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Any Mizbeach that does not have the following features is possible for the avodah. It has to shalein loy kevesh. If it's missing the kevesh, the loy keren, or if it's missing one of its horns, or in this case, Tosfos says there's two reasons. So here it's not missing the horn; it's that the horn is damaged. But there's two considerations. Number one, any stone of the mizbeach that's damaged to the extent that a fingernail would catch in it, like a shchita knife, is possible. So therefore, so that stone is possible to be in the mizbeach. Second of all, Tosfos says also the horns themselves had to be square, and here it's not square anymore because it was damaged. So therefore, so that's what we mean by it doesn't have a keren. V'lo yisoid, or if the mizbeach is lacking a yisoid, v'lo ribua, or if the mizbeach is not square, posel avoda. Any of those things make it possible for the avoda. Rashi explains, based on a Gemara in Zvachim, that any time when it says about a certain feature of the mizbeach, when it says the word hamizbeach in connection with that feature, then it means it's ma'akev. All of these things, someplace in the description of the mizbeach, it uses the word hamizbeach. As opposed to, for example, let's say the size of the mizbeach, the height of the mizbeach, the width, the length and width of it, the other features, for example, the other features of it, those are not ma'akev. Rabbi Yosi Behuda says also the soviv is ma'akev because there's a pasuk that mentions tarkov hamizbeach. So again, you have the word hamizbeach there, and he holds that tarkov refers to the soviv, whereas the chachamim hold that it refers to the kiyor, which is near the mizbeach but not actually part of it. So, or not key, sorry, not kiyur, but rather the, not, not kiyur, but rather kiyur decoration on the Mizbeach. They had the chut asikra over there, and they had some decoration, and they had some decoration near it. So the point is that if the Mizbeach is missing a keren, or in this case, where the keren is damaged, then it's possible. So that's what I mean. Therefore, on that day, that keren was damaged, and therefore, they couldn't use the Mizbeach until it was fixed. But meanwhile, they put in a block of salt over there, so at least it doesn't look damaged. So covered for the Mizbeach.